Good evening. This is Noreen Sumter on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. Guess what day it is? It's Tuesday. And Tuesday is the favorite, my favorite day of the week. Why? Because I get to play on the show with you. So I'm really excited to be here. I am excited to be here. However, I am in a miserable state today. I had a very difficult day. I'm not going to say a bad day because it's never a bad day. The day was very, very difficult. And like I said to my friend just now downstairs, that my rabbit nearly got his teeth out. And she said, rabbits are usually nice and fluffy and sweet. I am. I'm nice and fluffy and sweet. And you can pet me. But if I get that buck tooth out, boy, it's a whole nother story. And I had to manage myself today because I always believe that there's people watching. But I had to manage myself today so that I didn't grow a full mouth of buck teeth because it would have been pretty ugly. So I'm going to term this day that today I suffered a little bit. Right? I suffered because I had to manage myself. I felt violated. I felt dishonored. And inside of that, what I developed was a really bad headache. But what I can be proud of is that I don't have to get crazy. I don't have to kill people off. And I don't have to think, well, this person is deliberately trying to destroy me or upset me. What I realized is that everybody has their intention, and the heat of a battle or heat of a moment, you know, the things, stuff goes flying, things go flying, people's emotions get checked in. Some people who can emote, some people who don't emote shut down and get into like the corporate expression where they take away any energy that they have and they just become like a flat entity with no emotion, no connectedness, loss of humanity, and no compassion. So that's what I feel, just like I feel heat. And if I say to my friend, I feel hot, and she says to me, no, you don't. It's cold outside. I felt heat today. And then I was told, and when I say heat, I mean dishonored, disrespected. The person said, no, you don't. And I said, these are my feelings? No, you don't. But when people say they feel upset, they feel disappointed, they feel dishonored, they feel hurt, whatever, brokenhearted, that those are their feelings. And we do not have the right to take that away from them. Let them have their feelings. We shouldn't have to fight for our feelings. We should be able to express them with freedom. So tonight, the conversation is about suffering. That's a form of suffering when you don't say, when I don't say what's there for me and I just sit there and suck it down and my blood pressure starts to rise and I get upset. That is a form of suffering. So I don't believe in having that. I believe in expressing myself, sharing what's there so that I can, you know, dissipate the feeling and get myself back together and start to think clearly. So, suffering, we're going to look at tonight. Many people are addicted to suffering. Suffering at work, suffering on the job you hate, suffering the dead relationships. We just had a whole conversation about relationships. Relationships that are draining your soul, either love relationships, family relationships, colleagues, groups, clubs, whatever relationships is, suffering about your lack of money, your lack of time, suffering about with things that you can change, but you choose not to, but you don't choose not to consciously. It's an unconscious experience. So you just complain about them. Suffering is a tricky thing. It's habitual act, a reaction, and it usually has us hold on without even knowing that we're suffering. Suffering does not have its place or sorry, let me rephrase that. Suffering does have its place and purpose in the world. In an ideal situation, suffering is looked at, if it's investigated, can be quickly released, right? We can release it. But a lot of us choose to maintain that suffering, right? Suffering is also a contrast, right? If you look at it, it's a contrast between having a good life or not. Suffering could be, I'm suffering with pain, right? And you can go and get yourself, the fact is that you want to be healthy, but you can say, you can continue to maintain the suffering because it gives you something, or you can release the suffering. So it can be released quickly. It's not easy. So tonight, I just want you to join me to explore suffering and how our addiction to it, right, can cause us just to suffer. So my show tonight is no more suffering or complaining about your suffering. You don't need it, right? So we can open up the door and join me in kicking that sucker out once and for all. So I have two friends in the studio tonight. And later on, I might invite them to come and talk with us. And maybe they'll discover, or that we'll discover together, some ways that they have suffered and release them. And we can go on with the show. So 10 ways to cope with suffering. So number one, realizing that no one escapes this cross. It's a cross that we all have to bear at some point or sometime in our life. Everybody suffers one way or another. Some suffer more than others. You know, some suffer through drama. I used to be a drama queen. I'm still drama, but now I manage myself in a much more appropriate way rather than suffer and make everybody wrong for it. Even the most holiest of people, right? I'm sure even Oprah suffers or has suffered. I'm sure Deepak Chopra has suffered. I'm sure, you know, our poor guy who just died, Hugh Hefner. Oh my God, I never thought he would ever die. I mean, honestly, Hugh Hefner was a fixture in my life. Playboy bunnies, the tails and everything. I mean, I had a fantasy of being a Playboy bunny, but, you know, I couldn't really see myself doing that, but I did have the fantasy. But I was so sad when I heard that he died. I thought that he would just live forever. Fortunately, it doesn't appear that he suffered, even though the people who are like, was it fundamental Christians? Is that the Christian people, like severe Christians who thought that he was probably the devil because he like glorified sex and debaucherism? They probably thought that he would suffer, but he died in his sleep. How cool is that? You know, 91 years old? He died in his sleep. And, you know, the last time I saw pictures of him, he looked great for 91. So I never thought he would die. I'm sure Mother Teresa suffered. And there's a story that she suffered from depression. I'm sure she did. I'm sure it was like really, it was really trying for her to actually choose that life. She must have suffered over trying to make that decision. I know, you know, giving your life to not just God or Jesus, but giving your life to a monastery, giving your or a nunnery, or giving your life to the poor, like really giving your life to the poor, not knowing what is going to show up for that, right? I'm sure she suffered, right? I'm sure the Pope suffers, you know. But we all at some point, I hope not for myself, for my own self, that I don't suffer in my late ages with illnesses and just like suffer in my bed. You know, that's one of the scariest things for me is like suffering with illness. I have I'm diabetic and I have to maintain my health. Today was like, I'm really seeing how it's really important for me to take care of my health, even in moments when I am stressed out. This experience that I had today had me stressed out, so upset, so disappointed that I didn't even eat. I didn't eat today, right? And as a diabetic, that is not a thing to do. So it's really important. And I call that suffering. I suffered. You know, it might not be like one that I'm sitting silently suffering. I'm a loud person. Even if I'm silent, I'm going to be, my energy is loud. It's big, right? But coming here on the train, I realized, oh my God, the only thing I ate today was a bran muffin, a cup of tea, and some slices of green peppers, and another cup of tea. I'm British. Right? Which is not good. That's a form of suffering. That's not me not taking care of myself because I was in a state of breakdown, right? So, like, I'm really disappointed. I am actually disappointed in myself that I did not take care of my well-being and I let a certain situation take me out of myself and I allowed suffering to impact my life. So, accepting suffering, I know it sounds crazy, but it's difficult to recognize it while we're in the midst of suffering. While I was suffering today, while I was reacting to that situation, I didn't realize that I was doing something to make myself suffer, right? So I worsened the experience. It was a negative emotion. You know, I had a negative experience today. So anger, bitterness, frustration, sadness. Need to push those negative emotions aside and replace them with patience and calm. And in doing so, the feeling of suffering won't be compounded. I'm really grateful that I'm here today. This is almost like a therapeutic experience. I too, as bubbly and as energetic as I am, I experience suffering. I am not removed from suffering like many of us. And the only difference is I won't suffer in silence, right? It's something that I have to work through, share with others. And it's when I'm speaking to my clients who are suffering or in a space of suffering, it's good to talk about it. So that's why it's also good for me to share and talk about suffering because it impacts all of us. It's something that we can't get away with. It doesn't have to happen every single day. It can happen from moment to moment. But what's exciting about it and it's not really exciting, but what's exciting, what can become exciting is that you recognize it immediately. You can take stock of yourself and change directions. So on that note, I will be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo! Woo!
Talking Alternative Radio. 24 hours a day.
So we're back. This is Noreen Sumter, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And we're talking about suffering. I talked about our boy Hugh Hefner dying, which, I mean, I don't know if the world will ever be the same again. I mean, I don't know if he will even be replaced. Who's going to wear that red smoking jacket? Come on. Like, who can be Hugh? There'll never be a replacement. Never, ever. The world will not be the same. You know, and I really mean that. The world will not be the same again. Tom Petty died. You know, that's a, you know, we, I mean, death is a, comes to all of us, right? It's something that we cannot escape. And many of us don't like to talk about it. And that's one of the areas that we do suffering. Death for me is not a conversation that I'm afraid of. And it's not even an experience that I'm afraid of. I remember the first person that I know in my life that died when I was 11 was the man next door that we called Jimbo. Jimbo was a weird guy, and he would give you 10 pence to go down the street and pick up cigarettes for him. So you did it all the time. You know, you were happy to pick up cigarettes for him because you get 10p. And at that time, 10p was a lot. 10 pence. We called it 10p. And he died. And I remember being 11 years old, and I had a dream that he had come to my front door, and he had, I call it a Dick Whittington pack. You know, my friend Ruth, she's here. She's from England. So I'm sure she read the story as a child about Dick Whittington. It was a guy that had a piece of cloth and a stick, and he had it on his back walking down. So in my dream, he was wearing a beige trench coat, right? A Mac, rain Mac. He had his hat on, his flat hat, and he had his little Dick Whittington pack. And he came to me and he says, you know, I'm going on a journey. And in the dream, I'm like, no, you're not, you're dead. Right? No, you're not, you're dead. And he goes, well, I'm going on a journey. And I says, okay, like, where are you going to go if you're going on a journey? Because you're dead. You're just going to walk forever, right? That was the experience that I had. He's just going to be walking through death forever. And in that moment, I realized that for me, at 11 years old, I realized that there was a frontier. I probably didn't call it a frontier, but there was a way that we don't actually die. We just go on. Maybe the vehicle that we're walking around in, the body dies, but the spirit goes on forever. And even though I'm talking to you about Jimbo, I can see him in that dream leaving on this journey. The other experience I had was when my father died. My father had suffered with diabetes for many years, and he didn't take his medication because he was like, I'm not taking this friggin' medication anymore. It's just not working for me. He, years later, my father died when he was probably in his 80s. And yes, because he had two sets of family. He had children that my parents are Caribbean, as I said prior to. He had two sets of children. He had children that could be my parents because their children were my age. And then he had us, right? So it's like he had two generations of children. And when my father died, I lived in the United States, and I remember going to sleep that night and having a dream that I was in a box and I couldn't get out. And I was in a box in London, and I was like questioning myself, how the hell did I get to London and why am I in a box? And so I go to work the next day, and I'm having this conversation with one of my bosses. I says, I think I'm going to hear something. I think my father died. I'm not really sure, but I just have this sense. No sooner had I said it, I got a phone call from my brother, and I said, what, daddy's dead, right? And he said, yes. How did you know? And I just knew, right? And so what, you know, I went to England. We buried my father. It was a really great funeral, I thought, because we had a party and the whole nine yards, because he had always asked that we celebrate his life. And we did. We had a party. And when I came back, I remember he would come to me in my dreams. I would dream about him. I don't know if that's him coming to me in my dreams. I believe it is. Or if it's just me wanting him to come to me in my dreams. Well, the way my father came to me in my dreams is exactly the way, and it might mean my mind just recreating things, is exactly the way he would wake me up in the morning. He would call from downstairs, which would be like on the first level of a house. We lived in what would be the equivalent of a brownstone. So my bedroom, which was more like my apartment, was on the fourth floor because I was messy and they wanted to keep me away from the rest of the house. And so my father would call Noreen in his deep West Indian, Noreen. Right. And I'd be like, yes, don't let me come upstairs and, you know, get up. Right. And so he would slowly, slowly walk up the stairs and I would hear him creeping up the stairs, not creeping, but walking up the stairs. I'm not going to tell you again, get up. And so I'd be like, oh, man, like that. And all of a sudden he would get, because, you know, we all know that if our parents come to our rooms, there's a certain point that you get to, that they get to, that you know you have to get up, right? So he would get to sort of like halfway down the hallway and I would hear that particular creak, like the, of the floorboards moving. And I would fly out of bed, right? Because I would take it to the last minute. And I would fly out of bed and stand by the door. I'm up. Can you see I'm up? Right? Because every morning he would threaten the same thing. It was the same. It was a ritual. Noreen, get up. Right? And then he would, don't let me come up there. Because his threat was, if he came up to my room and I wasn't up, he's going to throw water on me. Right? So it would always be that fight. Now, and so I remember that. So that was how he showed up in my dream. And so I'm in New York in my bed with my husband and I bolt up. I hear this, Noreen, get up, in my apartment on 162nd Street, which he had never been to. And I bolted up in the bed and looked around and I was like, oh, shit. For me, I think he was actually in my house, but I know it was like he's dead and it could have been a part of just my spirit. But my father had come to me in many dimensions and he came to me when I was on vacation and he was dressed in vacation gear. And I'd never seen my father in vacation gear. I'd never seen my father in like a Hawaiian vacation shirt or shorts. And I'm like, but you're dead. How is this possible? And he looked great. And he was young. He wasn't old or older. He was young. And he said to me, I'm really happy. You know? And he came to me two more times and he said, I'm really happy. So I really think that, you know, inside of the suffering and worrying about, oh, we're not going to, you know, we're going to die and we're going to suffer and we've done evil things. No, I don't believe that. I believe that suffering is a mental experience. And if you really look at it, it's also a contrast. If you're sick, you want to be well, right? If you're not happy, if you're sad, you want to be happy. It's like up and down, left, right, black, white. These are all contrast feelings. And this is what I feel that our souls or our souls want to the contrast. They want the good experience as opposed to the experience that we're languishing in, which is the suffering. We want to be happy. We want to be free. We want to be healed and we want to be healthy. So, you know, that was a long story about my father, but I don't talk about my father very often. And I think that he would be quite happy to hear me talk about him. And he would probably laugh if he heard this story and how it actually played out in my life. So we should not suffer in silence. Hello, Jackie. One of my friends just walked into the studio. It prolongs out your suffering. You're less likely to get the help that you need if you suffer in silence, right? It withholds vital information. Plus, it shuts us down and we try to avoid experiencing and feeling symptoms, which are messages telling us that we need to take a necessary action or we need to visit the doctor. So suffering in silence is not a good thing. When we suffer in silence, it reinforces symptoms. it creates resistance. And you know, when we resist things, what happens? They persist, right? I know it sounds common and cliche, but it's totally the truth. So it's really important to not suffer in silence and not reinforce symptoms. Sickness, it could be symptoms pertaining to not being happy on a job, not being happy in a relationship, not standing for yourself, you know, not honoring yourself, and all of those things. Suffering in silence, it highlights isolation. Secluding yourself from those who can help you, right? You may be your preference, who may not be your preference, but are still interested in what you're up to. I remember I had a neighbor who I hadn't seen her for a couple of days, and I was like calling her, and knocking on her door, and she wasn't answering the door. And I was like, anyway, she finally emerged, and I said to her, "What was wrong?" And she said, "I wasn't well." So I said, "Why didn't you call me?" She goes, "I don't like to put people out. Look, there's so many of us in this city, men and women, who live alone." I'm not going to say it's all women or it's all men. It's both of us, both genders, who live alone and do not have family or friends that are nearby. But we have neighbors, right? And there's no reason, unless you want to create one, for you to sit in your apartment without food, being sick and suffering, right? So my friend was in her apartment suffering and being sick. And I'm like, do you really think that if I'm in my apartment and I was sick, that I would not call you? I said, "I'm calling you. I'm calling everybody. I'm calling the guy at the coffee shop. I'm calling the guy who delivers my falafels. I'm calling everyone, because we are a community, right? And suffering in silence does not, you know, it does not, what do I want to say? It does not create, you do not participate or engage in the community when you're in need, right? I do not believe, I suffered today, but I'm aware that I was suffering. But if I was sick, I'm not going to lay in my bed and suffer, right? I'll have my neighbors coming down and taking care of me. And I'm really adamant about that, because it's like, I will take care of you. If my neighbors are sick, I'm going to take care of them. I'm going to check in. I'm going to make sure that they need me to take them to the doctors. I'm going to go to the doctors with them. Whatever they need, I'm going to ask, because they might not return the favor, but somebody else is going to return the favor. So suffering in silence is not, it's not an appropriate thing to do, especially if you're sick, right? Especially if anything, right? Sickness or whatever. Suffering in silence does not work. So secluding yourself from those who can help you, your neighbors, your friends, because you're sick and you don't want to put upon people, that is so passé. That does not work, right? If you feel that you're thinking for other people, if you think that you're putting upon your neighbors because you're sick, then you're thinking for your neighbors. You're not giving them the opportunity to serve, right? We all are here to support and serve each other. So I am just going to take that moment and be served. And I'll be back in a moment. Thank you.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
If you have an interest in marijuana, you want to know about marijuana, law, policy, and culture, then feel free to join me, Joseph A. Bondi, every Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning on my show, In the Know 420, on TalkingAlternative.com.
Legalize the earth to continue to resist the passage of this necessary legislation. Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of the Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on the Rob and Callie Show Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
So I was just, you know, looking through my notes and stuff, and what I find is that people who battle depression suffer, and they suffer in silence, and sometimes the depression is so bad that they can't even articulate it. It's just an experience. Fortunately, I've never suffered with depression. I have been depressed, but never depression, right? So I can't even imagine what that would look like if I suffered with depression, because being depressed is a dark and hazy, you know, when I was depressed or have been depressed, I haven't been depressed in years, but I was depressed as a teenager, maybe because I couldn't get what I wanted. Or more, probably more because I was growing and I had different hormones flipping around in my body and I couldn't articulate what was going on. But it was very dark and very dismal. So I cannot imagine a person that deals with depression on a day-to-day basis. It would seem to me like a perpetual dark, cloudy day, like a day of rain and darkness. How it would feel in London, like one of those, you know, those movies that you watch from the 20s where it's really dark and it's really dismal. I imagine it would be that kind of a day where you're walking around with soggy shoes or soggy socks on and everything just feels wet and damp. That's what depression felt like when I was depressed as a youth. But I can't imagine what it's like to have that experience be something that actually dominates your day to day. But people who have depression suffer all the time. I remember reading a story about this. I'm probably going to botch it up or whatever, but reading a story about this man who had been through a plane crash and had shattered practically every single bone in his body and was lying in the hospital bed, and he had all kinds of tubes and tubes and wires and stuff hanging out of his body. He couldn't talk. The most he could do was blink his eyes. And he said that while he was laying there in the hospital on that bed, unable to do anything, given that he was a very active person, he knew that he had two choices, right? One choice was he could lay there and die. And he could just be in his head and complain and fuss about his condition. Two, he could be grateful that he could bat his eyelids. At least he could communicate. And so he went with the latter, which is he can bat his eyelids. And from batting his eyelids, he started to say, I'm going to walk out of here. I'm going to heal my body and I'm going to walk out of here. And every day he would visualize himself doing a little something different. Anyway, I know I'm going to probably botch this story up, but months later, he, maybe months or whatever, however many months or weeks, or it's months, it's got to be months because every bone was shattered in his body, he actually was able to wheel himself out of the hospital. And he, you know, was being so grateful. So there are people that have I don't know how I would be if something, and I don't even want to think about it because I don't even want to put it out there, but how I would be if something like that happened to me. A friend of mine, she fell down the stairs in her building and shattered her back. And she was in constant pain for the longest time. And they did surgery on her back. But how they did the surgery, which was really fascinating for me, was through her neck. They went in to her back, reached her back through her neck. And she said that for months and months and months, she was in severe pain. She was really depressed. She didn't know what to do with herself. And she went through the seven stages. Was it the stages of grief, right? Which was denial, anger, and all that, all the other stuff. And, but she said that she's really depressed because she cannot, you know, that we were going through what she could actually do. You know, she was an accountant where she sat a lot and she traveled a lot to different clients and things. Now she can't sit as long. She can't sit for an hour at a time. She can't walk for an hour at a time. She was also very athletic in terms of she worked out all the time. She can't do any of those things anymore, you know, because we were trying to look at it like maybe you could become a teacher. No, I can't because I can't stand up and sit down as often. She was thinking about becoming a house flipper. But you have, as a house flipper, she's going to have to be able to walk up the stairs and do that kind of rigor. But it's like, she said she suffered for months trying to decide whether she's going to do this operation, whether she could actually heal herself through, you know, this thing is going to correct itself. And then she had to come to grips with the fact that, you know, she's damaged. She's hurt. You know, her body will never be the same again. She can't move her neck the way she used to move her neck. So her neck is pretty much face forward. And if she wants to turn her neck, she has to turn her whole body. So her life is not this. And she has children, right? I mean, not young ones, but she still has children. And she was thinking about her grandchildren. You know, how is she going to play with them as her life goes, as she gets older? Because of this injury, she's not going to deteriorate. She's not going to get older the way she wanted to. She will actually, her body will start to deteriorate because she really hurt herself. And so, but we were talking about suffering. You know, she said she felt like she was suffering. But there's ways that you can suffer. You can suffer in moments, right? You can have a moment where you slip into suffering. And then in the next moment, you can create something else. That's what's so fantastic about our brains is that we can actually recreate and redesign our lives to accomplish anything. You know, I've met people who were born a certain way, who are in wheelchairs, who have to have permanent oxygen. And some of these people are some of the most happiest people because they don't know any different, right? And we call it suffering, oh, poor thing, but they're actually not suffering. They're living their life to the best of their ability and to the and doing the best that they can. There was one woman who I remember meeting. She was born with, I don't even know what this disease was, but she was very small. She was in a wheelchair. She had 24-hour oxygen. She had 24-hour care. She was never able to wash her own self, even wash her own hands, because her hands were permanently placed on the wheelchair. What do you call those sides? The sides of her wheelchair with her palms faced up, and she had tubes and stuff come. But this woman went on. I mean, she traveled all over the place, right? Did all kinds of courses. Never once did I hear her complain or suffer. I mean, if she needed to go to the bathroom, somebody had to take her to the bathroom, you know, and sort her out because that was something she couldn't do for herself. This woman started a not-for-profit organization for girls, young girls, right? So it's like we might look at her as a victim. We might look at her as suffering, but she wasn't. This is a life that she knew. She never knew any other life. And so she just lived her life doing what she did, living the way she lived, and she made the best of it because she reached his. We'd probably be looking at it and going, oh, poor so-and-so, right? where she's looking at it and saying, how can I make a difference in the world given my limitations, but not allowing my limitations to stop me, right? So we get to choose how we want to live our life. We get to say how long do I want to suffer for? And we can choose it. We can choose whether we're lying in the hospital bed and all we can do is bat our eyes, or we're born and we have to be in a wheelchair for the rest of our life, and that's what we know. Or me as an adult, which I used to like try to manipulate my mother with depression. And it was more often than not, I got depressed when she said I couldn't do something, I couldn't go somewhere. And so I'd get really depressed about it. And I remember saying to my mother, I'm going to kill myself, which we all do. I don't know. Most of us do as teenagers. I'm going to kill myself. I knew I was going to kill myself. And my mother knew me well enough to say, go ahead then. Right? Do you need help? And you know, like my mother, I love my mother. She was a really special person because if I said to her, I'm going to go kill myself, she'd be like, okay, then. Right? Do you need some help? And in that moment, you know, I sounded so ridiculous, right? I'm going to kill myself. I would start laughing because she didn't take me seriously. And then in that moment, I'm like snapped out of the crap that I was dealing with. So let's have a look and see what else we can look at. You can't let suffering consume you. It's not an easy thing to do, but when suffering consumes you, we can get lost in it. We get lost in our drama, and it's not easy to find, but it's not easy to find support. Like some people turn to God, right, when they're in a space of suffering. More often, I have a friend actually this week, and she was a victim of the Florida hurricane, Irma. Is it Irma? Yeah, Irma. What? I think it was Irma. There have been so many. And she had to relocate, and there was a GoFundMe for her. And I was reading one of her email messages this morning, and she was saying that, you know, she's always had God in her life. Right. But she has now taken on Jesus Christ in her life. And she said that her life, she's seeing it in a whole different way. Right. So she had an experience where she could actually suffer, but people reached out and supported her and raised money for her to get her settled. And she decided to take Jesus Christ in her life. That works for her. We all have to find. Some people might take on Buddha. Some people might go out and do charity. Some people might go running. Some people might start drinking. Yeah, it's true. Some people might smoke reefer, right? They might get their bud on. I don't need that because I'll be giggling like crazy or a super duper paranoid, right? Some people might... Some people might take on, my phone just started talking to me. I'm wondering what my phone is taking on. But whatever it is that you need, you know, to alleviate your suffering, it's your responsibility to find it. People will support you if you ask for help. People will be there for you, but people will be there for you if they know that you're taking responsibility, and if you can go an inch, they'll go that inch with you. If that's all you can do in that moment, baby steps, they'll go baby steps with you. But if you refuse to do any steps and you're fighting them while they're trying to support you, dude, you're going to be on your own. So we are going to be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
We're back. This is Noreen Sumter, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. So I just want to say that, you know, what the Dalai Lama said, life is pain. Oh, God, I don't even like to hear that. But life is pain. Suffering is optional. You get to choose which side you're on. Excuse me. So this weekend, I had a Netflix binge, and I sat and watched A Pursuit of Happiness with Will Smith and Jaden Smith. I've seen it before, but what a wonderful movie, right? Now, that guy was like, I mean, he was suffering, right? He was suffering. But he just took a bite out of life. He just bit it. He just really chose when the chips were down, when he could not sell those machines, those bone density machines that he had to hump around. Was it Los Angeles or was it San Francisco? It looked like San Francisco. Was it? Is it San Francisco? Because it was extremely hilly. And Bro Man had to ride the bus. Like, literally, I went to California and I said to my Los Angeles and I said to my friend, oh, can I ride the bus? And they were like, hell no, you will not ride the bus. And I was like, why? And there was because the bus is for crazy people. So here's this guy humping these. I can't remember his name. If you remember his name, let me know, please. He was riding the bus, carrying these machines, this bone density machine, which was a new technology, and he had to go from hospital to hospital. And his girlfriend or his wife was just beating him down, like, you need to get a job. You promised me that when I had this baby, you would take care of me. She was, like, really on it. She wanted a life. When they got the bone density machines, he got, like, I don't know, hundreds of them, and he put them in their apartment, and that was when possibility was alive, and they were gonna sell these bone density machines. He invested the last of his money, and they were gonna sell it, and they were gonna have a great life. Well, you know how life goes. You want to be this thing. You want to be a coach, Noreen. You know, there's a lot of things that you have to learn, right? And then you have to go through, you have to plod through life and learn these things. And he had to plod through and learn how to sell these machines. And they couldn't pay the rent, and the rent was due, and the man was knocking at the door, and the daycare, and the kid was at daycare, and the old lady that was watching him, Mrs. Lee, was having him watch television. He'd come home and he'd watch an Love Boat. And his father was like, I'm giving them $150 a week and you're watching Love Boat? What the hell, right? So she has a conversation with him. And he's like, well, it's history. She told it was history and they need to learn a bit of history. This man was stressed out and he goes outside and the husband's cleaning the pavement. But there's happiness. Happiness is spelt HAPPYNES. And he's telling them... And he's telling them it's wrong. And they're like, whatever. And then there's the big fuck on the graffiti. And he's like, when are we going to clean up that word? And he's like, whatever. So now your kid, you're trying to educate your kid every morning to how to spell happiness. And your kid's asking you about the word fuck. When is it appropriate to say fuck? It's never appropriate. Right? But anyway, then he he gets this, he sees these happy people who are selling stocks, or they're at a, in a stock market type environment. And he's like, oh my God, they look so happy. And he was like, does one have to pursue happiness? No, one has to be happy and create happiness. And he wanted his piece of the pie. And what I love about this man is that he was determined. He was determined to get this internship. But the internship for a man that has a family and a wife, it didn't cut it. But you know what? He bit the bullet and he said, I'm going to do it. And he worked with them for 6 months. He's in for 4 to 6 months, no money, no pay, right? And he had to, his wife by this time, they've broken up, left him. He's living in a homeless shelter, sleeping in a toilet. He had to sleep in a toilet one night, which he created a game for his kids so that his kids was, you know, just fulfilled or went into the toilet and slept with him. And people are banging at this man cried. As my mother would say, he cried the living eye water, right? The living eye water come out of this man's eyes. I felt for him. You know, you feel for him because he's committed. He does not want to suffer. He wants to transform his life. He didn't have a daddy, and he was committed that his son was going to have a father in his life, and he was going to do the best thing for his kid. That story, oh my God, was amazing, right? He did not let his circumstances dictate how he was going to live his life, right? He did not let the toilet make him feel like a bad person or make him say he's not a good father. He was a great father because he took care of his kid. He did not skirt his responsibilities. He did not skirt his responsibilities, and he came through. And years later, he sold his company as a money manager, whatever, for millions and millions of dollars. Now, he sold that company. He went through all that. He had a story to share, a story that can actually make a difference in somebody's life. I know it's made a difference in my life. It makes me see, like, if I choose, wake up, get up and choose, take one action, foot in front of the earth, I can sit and suffer if I choose, but I don't. It's an option, and it's not an option that I choose. So I just want to say, I don't know this man from Adam, and I know there are tons of men and women that are out there that have experienced this kind of life, and they have gone on. So we don't have to suffer. We get to choose, choosing moment by moment by moment. He had to choose every moment of his life to be in this intern. He had to get in earlier. He had to put in, let's say, 4 hours what his cohorts were doing in 8 hours, and pick up his child and go stand online to get a room in the shelter. My God. I don't know if I would ever have that kind of fortitude to pull through, but he did. And I really, really love it. Again, like I said, but the Dalai Lama says, life is pain. And he really did experience pain. But the other side of that was option. Right? Optional. And he chose to go through the pain and come out. I was reading another story. I did a lot of reading. I was reading another story about, like, this man who one day he was driving his kids home from, school or something. And he went by the supermarket to pick up food. And he gets to the supermarket checkout, gives them his card to find out he has no money on the card. He gets in his car and he starts to berate himself. You're fucking useless. You're a useless father. You're a waste. Look at you. You're a mess. He made himself so wrong, right? And so he didn't know what he was going to do. But on the way, he decided that he's going to go to his brother's house and ask his brother for $50. He went home and he realized that was like a come to Jesus moment for him. And the come to Jesus moment was that he does not have to make himself wrong. What happened was that he didn't have money. He went to get food. He didn't have money for the food, right? That was no reason for him to suffer and call himself names and berate himself and say that he's a bad father. He was a man that didn't have money. So when he got home, he sat down and he thought about that. And he got to the realization that if he keeps on thinking that he's a bad father, a bad person, that's not going to open up the doors for him to make a difference. He had to check himself. And when he checked himself, he realized saying this does not support me, does not move me forward. All it was I didn't have money for food. In that moment, he decided and he chose to not ever speak to himself like that again, not to ever berate himself in that way, but to look at what was missing. What was missing, he didn't have money, and he never got to that place again. He was able to handle his business, make sure he had money, build his company. And there's a whole lot of backstory about what he did, but he never handled that again. So I say this to say that you can suffer and you can berate yourself and make yourself wrong, right? And call yourself names. Some of the names that we call ourselves, if another individual said that to us, we would punch him in the bloody face, right? Dead in the face. We'd punch him in the throat. I think that would be better, right? We'd punch him in the throat. And the fact that we are saying that to ourselves, we are also teaching people to speak to us in that way. And so it's really important. That is also a form of suffering, right? So speak well of yourself so others will speak well of you. And even if others don't speak well of you, you speak well of yourself. You don't have to answer that. And you don't have to react. And like today, and you don't have to suffer. Like I didn't eat because I was upset. Right? And I didn't take care of my well-being. And I could be dead. Unfortunately, I don't have a child that's going to dream about me. So, I dreamt about my father. So I have to be responsible, really manage myself. And it's just an opportunity for me to see what was missing in my life, right? And what was missing was I didn't take care of myself and I let somebody's energy and stuff impact my life. So I'll be back in. That's it. Oh my God. I did it again. I did it again. This is the last segment. We have 1 minute and I just want to say no suffering. What I say to my clients, suffering is not allowed. No suffering. And so until next week, at this time, same bat station, same bat time, beyond potential, live like your way, and I'm going to eat. Have a good night.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo!
What's that?
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on talkingalternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to secretsofthesire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Talking Alternative.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.